right. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel. I'm Sam.
I'm Dennis.
We're back after
a couple weeks break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, we are here. It's been a little bit of time. We took some time off just because logistically we were having a hard time coordinating everything with everything going on in one another's lives. And then I got COVID on my birthday. As listeners know, I had taken an understudy gig at a theater here in Chicago, and I had been needed multiple times, and ended up going on this past Sunday. Sunday would have been like the 22nd of May. Mm-hmm. And at that point I was COVID free. Everything was fine. And then we had a pickup rehearsal on Thursday, the 26th of May. And I took a test, and the rapid test was negative. The PCR test ended up being positive, which I found out the following day, Friday, May 27th, which is my birthday. I was sitting down to eat my birthday dinner with my family, and checked the email while I was waiting for them to all get to the table, because the food had arrived as we ordered in from Chicago Diner, because it's one of my favorite places. Amazing vegetarian, vegan food. And, getting everything ready, and I'm checking my phone while the kids and Jess are getting to the table, and I got the email, and I was in denial for a minute, immediately took another rapid test. It was negative. And, I had been feeling okay. And I even got to the point where, you reached out to me and you were like, hey, do you want to record tonight? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably fine, but maybe we'll hold off. And then I rallied a couple hours afterwards and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And you had already made other plans, which is totally understandable. So we decided to record a couple of days later. And the funny thing about that is I probably feel the worst that I've felt this entire time. today, but it's fine. It's still incredibly mild, all things considered. I actually recorded with the Quantum Leap podcast last Saturday, which was a heck of a lot of fun. And I was feeling pretty great that day. I didn't have any issues whatsoever. So make sure you check out the Quantum Leap podcast episode, with their show and tell, on YouTube. That'll be a lot of fun. It was great. I, unfortunately, because I was isolating and quarantined, didn't have access to any of my things. So I was just kind of along for the ride, and saying things.
Sure.
Oh, I have that. I have that.
Well, it's funny. It's like when you texted me that, I was like, oh, that's when I knew you were serious about your isolation. Like, you didn't even have Jessica throw it down the stairs,
Yeah, right. But it was a lot of fun, like I said. And Allison Pregler has an amazing collection of stuff. Collection of stuff. Seeing some of the stuff that Matt Dale has as well, and Brian Green, who runs the Al's Place website. He's got some really, really cool pieces too. So it was really cool to see what everyone had, and to just get the chance to talk to everybody. And I hope people will enjoy it as much, I think, as we had doing it.
Fantastic.
Because it was a lot of fun.
All right, great. So with that in mind of you not feeling great, I don't have COVID, but we've had a busy weekend. It was my birthday this last weekend.
That's right.
And our youngest, Eleanor, the week before. So we had a Moana-themed party.
That's
over
awesome.
The weekend, and we had a few people over, and she did not like it. She wasn't like upset or anything. She just has this very like weary shooting everybody side eye kind of thing going.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun for the rest of us and whatever, but we're still kind of recovering from that. So with that in mind, we're going to talk about this week's episode, Plating and Seymour, and we're going to try to keep it truly in the spirit of the capsule review, try to keep it a little bit shorter than what we've kept the last few ones. And we've gotten a ton of great emails that we keep saying that we're going to read. So I think what Sam and I decided before we hit record is that we're not going to address any emails this week or comments this week. What we're going to do is we're going to save it for our next episode. It's kind of a palate cleanser between season one and season two. We're just going to do an all email comment feedback episode and just dive into those, like really spend time with those. So if you've sent us an email and we haven't responded to it yet, so sorry. Like we say, we're just two tired dads. We're going to jump into it. And we're keeping things kind of dark. I got to work on my lighting setup. You don't have your ring light on because you're not feeling great. You don't feel a little good.
Yeah.
But it all fits the noir mood.
That's right.
Our episode this week.
It does. Now, before we jump right in, though, we did want to take a couple of moments just to talk about the new series and some of the new information that we have, which isn't much. And it's stuff that's been out there kind of in the ecosystem for a couple of weeks. So most of our listeners are probably already well aware. But one of the things that I did want to address is that there's been some questions about when the show will shoot and where it will shoot. When, we don't know for certain. I would imagine that they're probably, you know, eyeing August is when they'll begin filming new episodes. It could be a little bit later than that. I don't imagine it'll be any earlier than that, although it's possible. As far as where they are, we've mentioned this before, but just to kind of reconfirm, all indications, everything that we have and everything that we know and everything that the cast has been talking about is that they will be shooting in Los Angeles. We know that Caitlin Bassett just moved from New York to Los Angeles, like literally just a couple of days ago. Her Instagram, had multiple posts of her saying goodbye to New York and all of her friends, and sharing a bunch of, wonderful images and memories from her time in New York, including all the way up to like being selected as a part of that ABC showcase and newcomers thing, where she kind of, that's where she got the momentum, which eventually landed her the Quantum Leap audition and got her the role there. So she's moving to LA. We know that Mason Alexander Park, they have already moved to LA, I believe, are in the process of moving to LA. Raymond Lee already lives there, so he doesn't have to move.
Sure.
But neither does Ernie Hudson. So we can just tell, based off of all of that, that everyone is moving out to LA. It looks like LA will be where it's shot. That's where the original series was shot. So I imagine there will be some location shooting here and there, but probably not too much. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm guessing August shooting in LA, and we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens after that. We'll probably get some info about scripts and maybe episode titles for the first season. I would imagine some of that stuff will leak, early sure. August, late August, somewhere around there. We'll see who gets to it first.
Well, sure. Yeah. I feel like I've seen one article talking about, I think that they have planned for the first season, one episode where he leaps in to a spaceship that is about ready to take off.
Like
very similar to The Wrong Stuff.
Yes.
And even like there was a hint in the article, like they even make a sly, like for if you're like an OG fan, they even make a sly reference to The Wrong Stuff in the intro.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. At some point we should have an episode or part of an episode where we just speculate on like what are some of the leaps that right. we're going to see, I was thinking like, and we're going to talk about how Played Against Seymour is a genre episode that they kind of got away from. What are some of the genre movies of the 1980s that we could dive into? I want to see a
buddy cop movies. Like, come on.
There we go. Buddy cop. I want to see a Roadhouse movie.
Totally. Yes. Yes.
Just. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. Something set or in or around like Wall Street, something about money and power in New York and greed. And
exactly.
even if they want to take the comedy twist and go like more Secret of My Success versus Wall Street, I'm fine with that.
Sure.
Secret of My Success. That was my jam.
Someone posted on Twitter the other day. They're like, they're going to have Ben leap into a boy band, aren't they?
Oh, I hope so.
They totally are. That's gonna be their glitter rock.
Here's our first big tangent. You say that, and it made me think of, I watched It Chapter One recently. I had not seen it yet. Dennis and I, of course, are Stephen King fans. We've talked about Stephen King. We've talked about It specifically before on the podcast. I did not get to the theaters to see it. I actually at one point bought the movie on Blu-ray. It came without the digital code, so I sent it back and I was going to reorder to get the digital code, and I never did. Now, of course, it's on HBO Max. I'm isolating. I got nothing better to do, so I watch It Chapter One. So spoilers for It Chapter One real quick. That was one of the things that I thought was hilarious, is when Ben is listening to his Walkman and Beverly comes over and she pulls the headphones off to listen to what he's listening to, and he's listening to New Kids on the Block. That was adorable, and I loved it. And I was kind of against the changing of the times, sure. You know, because I enjoyed the novel being set in the 50s and in the 80s. And so to change that around, you know, at first I was kind of like, I don't know about this, but it worked. It didn't distract or bother me at all. There were other things that did, but that's besides the point. Anyway, there's my first tangent for the episode.
There we go.
My we're gonna have a lot of rattled brain. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're gonna get there. We're gonna get it there. So anyway, before we dive into the episode proper, let's do some housekeeping. Find us on the web, fateswidewheel.com, all the social, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Haven't done anything on TikTok yet. Posted a couple videos on TikTok. And I just want to say this. If you are on TikTok, please do us a favor and find us and follow us at Fates Wide Wheel. I'm making that specific ask because the way the TikTok algorithm works right now, and they're constantly shifting it, but the way it works right now is if you're a new account starting out, it can be really hard to get traction because they show your video to your followers first, mm-hmm. and then they expand it out to at large. But if you don't have any followers, it's really hard to
just yelling into the void.
Yeah. So like I said, we're going to start producing content for that here pretty soon. We have a couple new patrons. Let's read off our patrons here. Let's start at the beginning of the episode instead of the end because we get really long-winded at the end and we know a lot of people probably drop off there. A couple new ones. Amy Holtkamp, thank you so much. Karen Saxon, she's a long-time listener.
Guested on an episode, actually.
Guested on two episodes, well. but then we screwed the pooch. Something happened. We had a technical glitch and then we had to re-record that. That was a fun time. Anyway, mm-hmm. Karen Saxon, thank you. And then of course, Rich Bork, Christopher Redman, Audrey Atchley, Dana Bias, and Jill Wilson. Thank you all so much.
Thank you all so much
for your support. Now, any more tangents before we dive in?
No.
Before we go? All right, let's dive in. The season one finale, played against Seymour.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'll read the description off IMDb this time. This one's pretty simple. Sam, in the body of a bogey-like Seamus, teams up with a neat kid to find the hitman who killed his partner.
There you have it.
Straightforward.
Pretty simple and straightforward. Let's get to the writing of this episode. So,
sure.
you know, it's interesting because the construction of the episode overall is well done. I think that like you've said, and you mentioned it, I believe, on Twitter as well, that as far as being one of the genre episodes that they did, which again, they kind of fell off from, which I thought the show was a little bit better for. I will always contend that season two overall and, you know, the first few episodes of season three are the best. Like, that's the best stretch of Quantum Leap. And so many of those episodes are just well-written television dramas. You know, they don't necessarily need anything to be a pastiche of or parody or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it works for the most part. I think it gets a little overindulgent. I think it gets a little too pleased with itself at times, with all of the references and all of the, you know, the corny pulp dialogue. I think that had it had a little bit more restraint on some of that, had it been a little bit more clear about Lionel and him being, you know, because it kind of just comes out of nowhere that all of a sudden, like, he's the bad guy. And it's like, mm-hmm. wait, what? That guy? Like, why? Like, why is that guy the bad guy? Oh, he had a thing for the girl. Okay. But why that felt a little out of nowhere to me. That said, I think the principles are done well. I think Seymour is written very well. And I think other than that revelation at the end of who the killer is, not making a whole lot of sense, I think that it's done well. But I did play it safe, as Dennis would say. I gave it a 7.
All right.
I felt like maybe I could have given it an 8, but I felt like a 7 was the highest I could go.
Okay. So here's my feeling about that. And I posted on this in the little back and forth in Twitter that I posted with Audrey, actually. I think for the genre episodes to work, they have to fully commit to it.
Hmm.
And I think they have to fully lean into it because Audrey pointed out Blood Moon.
Right.
Like, that was like their attempt. And for me, like, I don't think of that as one of the genre episodes. And I think part of that is that Sam is so grounded. Sam is so resistant to the idea of anything spooky or supernatural or vampires or whatever. It just feels like Sam fighting against the story. And it doesn't work. So I think for the genre
episode, there's a couple other reasons why that episode doesn't work.
But I think I think the genre episodes are successful is because Sam leans into it so heavily.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it work. And it's, and I don't know if it'll work for, you know, constantly throughout, but I wish they would have continued like to come back and like do these kind of like genre episodes, sure, or more like fluffy episodes, you know, two or three times a season where they just like, just totally lean into it, let it go, and lean into the idea that Belisario had, that, that Quantum Leap was an anthology series where they really had a chance to explore those different kinds of episodes. Cause like, you know, we talked about it before, had there been a sixth season, Belisario was planning to do a cartoon leap and have Sam leap into a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And when asked about the logistics of that, he was basically like, it's my show, I can do whatever I want.
Right. Right. I mean, I will say that, because I don't wholly disagree with you, but I will say that they do try to do some genre episodes, you know, and some sort of pastiche episodes in season five, and they don't work, you know, and I think part of the reason they don't work, in defense of what you were saying, actually, is because they did get so far away from that. By the time they came back to it, it didn't feel quite like Quantum Leap anymore, because they had explored some other ground and done a better job of it. And that's why I think that, you know, season two, it really figures out, you know, so much about what the show can be. And I still think that there are some sort of, you know, there are episodes that borrow a little bit here and there from other sorts of genres and stuff that was popular, you know, in film or television at the time. But I just think that writing wise, like specifically speaking to the writing, I think that the writing gets a lot stronger in season two and season three to a degree. I think it starts to fall off a little bit here and there in season four, obviously. And then season five, I think, is all over the place. The odd thing is I feel like there are some episodes that we'll talk about later that might be better written, than they are in execution. But, you know, that said, I do think that you're not wrong. I think that when Sam in particular is enjoying the trappings of the leap a little bit, it certainly helps to sell it when it's this type of episode. Sure. You know, when it feels kind of like a bit of a pastiche, but I don't know. To me, you know, I've said this many times before, we've talked about it before. To me, I just think that Quantum Leap is stronger when it does, you know, kind of those living room dramas, those family dramas, mm-hmm. Or when it is having fun and being, you know, almost like a road movie, like Freedom or Her Charm, or, you know what, sure, I mean? Like, I feel like that those episodes tend to be a little bit stronger for me overall. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't completely disagree with what you're saying, though. And I think that had they maybe attempted to do this a little bit more in season two and in season three, then maybe there would have been more episodes, I think, that would rise above, that I would see and I would, sure, be like, oh yeah, those genre episodes are great. But because when they tried to do it in season five in particular, it just felt like kind of a mess.
It was just, yeah, yeah, it was just a cluster mug, to make an obscure Stephen King reference. And I hadn't really thought about, you know, Lionel being kind of a weird thing. Like, it did, when I watched the episode today, it did cross my mind, like, oh, it does just kind of come out of nowhere. Mm. But also the thing I like about it is that Lionel is the only male character in the episode who knows of Allison and is not drooling over her in the rest of the episode. Mm. Every other man we meet drools over her, down to the elevator guy,
right,
you know, wanting to take her to the ball game the day after her husband is killed. So I kind of think,
do you think, here's to dig far deeper into this script than probably anybody else ever has, but do you think that is because in his mind he already has her? Like, that's part of his thing, right? Like, in his mind, she's already his girl. He has this fantasy. So in his fantasy, because she's already his, he doesn't need to drool over her the same way that the other guys do. Do you think that that's part of it?
I think that could be part of it.
Psychologically speaking.
Psychologically. Or, you know, to be honest, like, I'm not up on my noir movies and stories. Like, I don't know if this is, like, directly, this whole idea is like taking specifically from a specific movie where they're lifting that idea of, like,
no, because generally in noir, cause I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the genre. Generally in noir, it's the protagonist or your anti-hero character that ends up being that either is at first the least interested in the femme fatale, but then of course gets drawn, you know, into her web by the, you know, the midpoint of the movie at least. But yeah, generally those are the ones that are kind of the hardened sort of, you know, I'm not buying your act, baby, you know, sort of thing, you know, as opposed to somebody like Lionel, who's the heavy, and usually the heavy is, you know, completely infatuated and possessive, which he does. Obviously, that's the reveal, right? The reveal is that he does have this, you know, deep infatuation and you know, thinks that she's already his and that they're going to fly off and be happy ever after together and that they just need to leave LA and everything will be okay. But yeah, it's weird because the episode obviously plays into a lot of those conventions, but in some ways, you know, it almost owes more to the pulps that Seymour is so infatuated with than it does to actual film noir.
Fair. I'm conflating. Yeah. Those two. Yeah. Yeah.
No. But I do think it draws a lot from those, you know, those hard boiled sort of, you know, film noir films. You know, I mean, obviously, when you put your main character that Sam, or not your main character, but when you put the person that Sam has leapt into as being kind of the spitting image of Humphrey Bogart, okay. What do you expect, right?
Mm, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, upshot, I gave it 8 out of 10.
Right on. I can see that. Yeah. All right. So next up, directing. So here's something that's interesting. You know, I think the script is good, solid, not necessarily remarkable. But I do think the directing is, I think this episode is incredibly well directed. I think there's a lot of interesting choices that are made with the way that it's framed and the way that the storytelling, is done. I think that, you know, they get a lot of mileage out of the locations that they use, which I think will kind of go into play with production values a little bit as well. But I really liked this, and for, I think, the similar reasons to you liking the episode overall, because it does the genre so well, I that's kind of where I ended up. It does the genre so well. It looks really good. It looks great on Blu-ray. Yeah, I think it's a really, 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 really great example of directing this type of Quantum Leap episode. I give it a 9.
Mm. Oh, wow. I think I'm going to bring mine up to 9 too. Because for everything, and it's just like some of the interesting choices that they did in the shooting, everything you said, and the one where Seymour goes to meet Sam at his office, and they have this one scene that just takes place through the office door.
Yeah.
And you hear it. And it's just like, it was just a different choice. Like, it was a different thing. Like, oh, that's an interesting choice.
Right.
I don't know why I like it so much, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, and one of my favorite, I mean, this is legitimately one of my favorite, like, Quantum Leap, you know, reveals ever, as far as I'm concerned. I love the way that we're given the time and place off of the pan and zoom in on the newspaper. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the way they cut it. Like, I don't understand why they had to cut the extra shot in there. I guess, you know, maybe it just didn't work, but I'm not going to nitpick that too much because, you know, it's TV and they were doing the best that they could. But yeah, I just love that. I love the fact that Sam thinks that he's in Los Angeles because of the Dodgers, but, you know, this is before they moved out west, so they're Brooklyn Dodgers at this point. Mm-hmm. So, like, it just tells us so much, and that kind of that economy of the storytelling is really, really well done. And I love that. I think that sets the tone for the whole episode.
Sure. Overall, I love the fact that he says, I'm still in LA, because that's where he just was.
Right. That's right.
And I love that at this point in the series, they were still playing with this idea of like, where am I in relation to New Mexico? You know,
am I getting closer?
Mm-hmm. Am I getting closer, bouncing around? And another thing, like, I wish that they had held on to.
Yeah. Right.
About the show. Right. Also worth noting, we are a few months before Sam's birthday.
That's right.
We could get into a whole thing about that.
Oh, God, could we?
Yeah. God or fader time, April, August. They sound kind of like,
why not? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, which is something that obviously has been debated a lot. And we talked a lot about it on our initial episode, which you can go find in the archives for a much lengthier discussion of that and many other facets of this episode. I was really kind of surprised with how much I liked the direction of the episode. I think that there's just a lot to like about it. You know, there's some things that don't work overall. And I'd like to get into that actually by moving on to acting, because I think that this Sure. this is the weird category for me on this episode.
Interesting. Okay.
So I think Scott and Dean are phenomenal in this episode because they are able to, as you mentioned before we even started talking about it, like Scott is able to lean into the trappings of the episode as Sam perfectly and yet never lose sight of Sam. You know, never lose sight of who he really is and the relationship that he has with this other person played so perfectly by Dean. This is another like just perfectly dialed in Al, as far as I'm concerned, because we get such a multifaceted Al. You know, this isn't just the Lothario. This isn't just the information dump. Like, this is a fully realized character, and that goes to the writing as well. I really like Al in this episode, and I think that they're both wonderful. The chemistry's great. You know, the moment where Sam, you know, insults Al about, you know, his womanizing and drinking and everything, and
that entire scene at the bar.
Yeah. Yes.
Just
absolutely. Yeah. Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, Seymour is also just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think he's so great, because it would be so easy to lean into, you know, this caricature that he is when we first meet him. And yet there's always something more at play. There's always something a little bit deeper to the character. And again, when Sam hurts him, you know, we really discover who Seymour is and Seymour's relationship with, I'm blanking right now, COVID brain on the Leapy, but with
Nick,
the relationship that the two of them have, is on full display, and it's just some really, really wonderful stuff. I love Claudia Christian. Everyone who listens to this podcast, has ever listened to this podcast, knows I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan, and Susan Ivanova is one of my favorite Babylon 5 characters. I think that she does everything that she needs to do in this episode to be successful, but not much more. And I don't know if that's because of the script, which is kind of where I'm laying most of the blame, or the directing. I don't think so, because so much else is done with the direction. But the character never really rises above being, you know, the stereotype of the what we would expect from that type of character. And I think that's unfortunate. I think because we get some really well-rounded characters, like Seymour, for instance, that it would have been really nice if Allison had been a little bit more well-rounded, a little bit deeper, because you start to question at some point Sam's infatuation with her. Because it does feel like it's mostly just, you know, looks and that she's the femme fatale. So he's supposed to be. And again, is it the acting? I don't know. Maybe, probably, partly. But I also think it's probably the writing. But overall, I mean, everything that we see throughout the course of the episode, I think the acting is exactly where it needs to be for a lot of these characters. It does exactly what it needs to do. So I feel really comfortable giving this an 8. And again, a lot of that goes to our regulars, and Seymour. I think that they do a really, really wonderful job. And it surprised me. I surprised myself after watching this episode and kind of thinking about the scores I was going to give it, that I was rating it so high, because I didn't expect to. I didn't expect to have enjoyed it as much as I did, because I don't think I was super flattering the last time around. I don't think I trashed it by any means, but I don't think that I rated it as highly as I did this time.
Sure. I think it's worth noting Willie Garson, who played Seymour. Unfortunately, he has passed away since we reviewed the episode.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he actually passed away last September.
Hmm.
And I remember, like, that was right around when it was like right before the new Sex and the City came out. I just remember there being some stuff said that I can't remember.
I remember that.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. He got a little short shrift as far as like tributes that were given to him. I can't remember. Oh, I think he just got like the way his character was not given like very much tribute in the revival. I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I completely forgot, unfortunately. And yeah.
But on the whole, like the acting in this, like I said it before in previous episodes, everybody understood the assignment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you said, like Willie Garson came in like really good with the Seymour character and showed like, you know, obviously like a very like over the top character, but also very vulnerable and relatable in weird ways. Yeah. If you have ever been a nerd who has idolized someone in your life, it's very touching. It's very poignant.
Yes.
It reminds me a lot of, I'm not sure, I don't know, we ever talked about how much of a MASH fan that you were.
Oh, totally.
But there's one episode of MASH where basically Hawkeye goes off on radar, basically says like you're closer to me than my underwear. You got to stop idolizing me.
Yeah.
And really, it really hurts Radar.
Yeah.
And every time I watch this episode, I think of that episode.
What a wonderful comparison. I think that that's right on the money. That Seymour is kind of our Radar. I mean, really. There's just so many lovely moments, and again, they get played so well, and I feel like they're the type of moments that, quite frankly, I might not enjoy as much in lesser hands. But even like the eyeglass moment where he's fiddling with the lens and it like pops out and Sam catches it and puts it back in for him. I feel like that's a moment that, unless you get it just right, it doesn't work. It just looks silly. It looks dumb. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks overly prepared and somehow they really pull it off well. And I think that that's one of those things where it's like, you know, the acting, directing, everything kind of comes together, you know, the editing, the cinematography and helps to pull it off. But how about that? I didn't expect to just be so moved by Seymour as I was. But yeah, this time around, I really Seymour really did it for me.
Yeah, it's good. And that's the scene at the bar between Sam and
Alex.
It's just wonderful. I don't know, as the series goes on, how many scenes we get like that, where it's just like a straight up scene between Sam and Al, and they cover, and like they're all over the place. Like they're talking specifically about, you know, the details of the leap, but they're also touching on how it personally affects them.
The episodes that immediately come to mind are like high watermark episodes of the series, like MIA and Leap Home. You know what I mean? They're not Play It Again Seymour. Not that Play It Again Seymour isn't a good episode, but this is not one of the episodes that I put on my list, you know?
But the way they talk to each other is so real. Like the way that, you know, the real dig that Sam makes on Al about, you know, I think with my head, I don't confuse, you know, I think with my head and I don't cloud my judgment with a bottle. That's it. But even before that, like Al's line of like, hey, you haven't been getting any lately.
Right.
You know, it's just, there's something that's a little bit more real to it than what we get a lot of other times. I think it's worth noting just from, and we'll get into this mythology more, this is the last time Al's alcoholism is brought up until Play Ball in season 4.
Wow.
Because I think after this episode, they just kind of drop that whole thing. Because they make a lot of jokes out of it, the pilot. Mm-hmm. And arguably in The Right Hand of God, because he's constantly tired, but you figure maybe there's a little, you know, hung over in there.
Which definitely opens up a lot of questions, because at this particular point in time, you know, when Sam leaps, I think, while it's never fully established, like in canon, if you will, but I would go so far as to say that, you know, he's sober at that point. Cause you know, Sam's the one that, you know, as the story goes, you know, Al's like a drunken mess banging on a vending machine, and Sam's the one that, you know, kind of rescues him out of the doldrums. And so I, you know, to me, it would seem that he would have you know, been sobered up at that point. And so begs the question of like, how much is, you know, is Sam leaping affecting Al and his sobriety, you know?
I don't know. And here's the thing. I've said it before. I've said it in episodes and I've said it on Twitter recently. In my headcanon, Al first season is different from Al second season. Somewhere between first and second season, Sam makes some change in history. And we go from the Al who's a drunk, the Al who went to MIT, the Al who was an astronaut. Somehow history gets changed and he becomes retired Admiral Guillermo Calavici.
I wonder what
episode. Headcanon, you can't fight with it. It's mine. It's mine. You can't take it away. Anyway, no. Acting, I gave it 8 out of 10.
Nice. Right on. On the same page there. Yeah. All right. Production values. This episode, it gets some high marks in the production values category because some of the locations that they use, and I mean, the hotel obviously is incredible. It's a very famous hotel. I can't remember the name of it right now. Where a lot of other things have been filmed. The scene at the club, with the band and the dancing and everything is so well done. The hangar, the airplane, like so much of this stuff, it's like they really, really went all out to make it look and feel exactly like they wanted to, to kind of be that homage to those bogey movies from, you know, the 40s. And it works so well. Maybe there are a couple of moments where it dips out here or there for one reason or another. For instance, when you can clearly tell that is Scott Bakula's stunt double and not Scott Bakula at all hanging in the elevator. Like, it's bad. At one point, you're looking at it and like it lingers just long enough. So you're just sort of like, wait, who's that in the? No, that's still supposed to be Sam.
I mean, one Blu-ray. Higher definition than we ever expected to see. Right. And to me, it's kind of like the conceit of, we talked about the few episodes with Starcross, like when they're driving in front of a backdrop and they're obviously driving in front of a backdrop.
Sure, sure.
It's the same kind of conceit of like, it's a stunt double. Like when I watch an old Incredible Hulk episode, I know it's not Bill Bigsby in green makeup. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Not quite the same thing, but you know.
Unless it's that episode where he gets trapped in between transformations.
In between the two, and then, oh God. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I know. But, you know, all that said, just to kind of keep my rating honest, I am looking at the Blu-ray and I am, you know, watching it in high definition and I am seeing all of those things stick out. So I didn't want to give it too high of a score based off of that. But at the same time, I felt like, it's pretty incredible some of the stuff that they pull off on this show that didn't have a super high budget. I gave it an 8.
All right. I gave it the same. And I don't know if I have much more to add. In interest of moving along, let's just move along.
So here we go, mythology. So this is a very interesting episode for me when it comes to mythology, because there's not a lot of overt stuff that really kind of digs into any of the myth of the show. But I did end up giving it a 6. And the main reason is because, the bar conversation between Sam and Al. I think that conversation that they have at the bar is, it not only furthers their relationship and gets us a little bit more invested in the relationship of our two principal characters, but it also reminds us that Sam has been doing this a while now. And that he is, you know, that he is clearly being deprived of certain things. And I'm not just talking sex here, but just even that physical closeness with, you know, the people that he loves, you know, the idea that like he can't touch Al. He can't pat Al on the back. He can't get a hug from his best friend. And we're going to talk a lot about that during Honeymoon Express, because that's one of the things during Honeymoon Express that breaks my heart. I remember when we watched it for the first go around, I got choked up on one occasion during that episode because their relationship. And I think that this episode, it does enough to further that. It does enough to remind us of the toll that Sam's leaping has taken him, that this is not a, you know, this doesn't dive below that 5 mark. It actually gets a 6 from me because of those things. And, you know, and there's cute little moments that I enjoy about the story too. You know, that Sam's read this book before, you know, that he's not having deja vu, that he's not, mm-hmm. you know, see that he's read sure. this book. Like, it's just that nice reminder of that, like, you know, this is a guy with a past that, you know, that reads books, plays instruments, has friends, had a life, you know, all these things. And now here he is, unable to get home. And so those little things that they do every once in a while, I think it does enough for me to further, you know, the mythology, not only of the show, but obviously of the character and those two characters in sure. particular. So gets a 6 from me.
Great. Yeah, we should have touched on this probably in the writing, but I love that aspect of the story is like he's having this deja vu at the start yes. of the episode. And watching it today, I kind of wish they kind of let that go a little bit longer.
Same here.
Because they only did a couple of instances, and there's like, oh, I read the book, and I wish they kind of let go a little bit more.
Especially because one of the things that succeeds so well in this episode is the voiceover narration, and that's the one thing though that I wish they sometimes would have gone a little bit further with. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like it treads that line sometimes of it being just Sam's voiceover narration, and then sometimes being, you know, Sam as Nick. Voiceover yes. narration, and I kind yeah. of wish they would have pushed that maybe a little further too, and mm-hmm. because it's such a trope of those types of films that I think it would have been a lot of fun to play with a little bit more. And I think that if they would have extended the mystery of how he knew all this stuff, that would have allowed them more opportunities to do exactly that before he find out that he'd read the book before. But yeah, that's kind of a minor quibble, and like you said, kind of goes back there, to yeah. the writing. But yeah, I get where sure, you're coming yeah. from.
And then as far as the mythology goes, like I said, there's so much in that scene at the bar and then the aftermath of it in the car, like the three-way scene between Sam and Seymour and Al, where Sam kind of apologizes to Al as best he can in front of another person.
Yes, yes.
And to me, it's again, an instant early on in the series where you really get the idea that Sam and Al were best friends.
Yeah,
because the first few episodes, you don't get that. The first few episodes, you don't get the idea that Al is really invested in Sam as a person and whether or not he actually gets home.
Right.
So just between those two things, I actually gave it 8 out of 10.
Nice. I can see that. I really can. I'm not going to adjust my score, but sure. I can totally, I totally get your reasons for that. Yeah. I think that's, it's very true that there are a lot of episodes throughout season one that, yeah, we don't get the closeness, you know. There are mm-hmm. times when it feels like maybe it's being built a little bit, even as early as Star-Crossed. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some moments, I think, where it feels that way. But overall, if you look at the season as a whole, I agree. I totally agree with you that this yeah. episode really kind of seems to solidify that. And when they open season two with Honeymoon Express, it's like it could not be any other way. Do you know what I mean? Like by the time sure. we're through with Honeymoon Express, these two are best friends. They would take a bullet for one another. There is yeah. no, you know, there is no other way to even broach the topic of their friendship and their relationship. Like that's it.
Yeah.
Don't say Honeymoon Express fans. Honeymoon Express yeah. is one of the best episodes in the whole series.
It's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just going to put this out there. And this is based on the interview with, Caitlin Bassett and Ernie Hudson and Raymond Lee on the red carpet. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes in case you haven't seen it. It's like it goes on for like 20 minutes. Like when you
yeah,
send me that
they
link,
really, yeah.
When you send me that link, I was like, oh, they're on the red carpet. This is gonna be like 2 minutes at best. But then it just kept going. I was yep. like, oh wow. And there's a lot of great material. And you get the idea of like how invested these actors already are in the characters and like where they're gonna go like thematically with some of their characters.
Yes.
But that is to say, just from what Caitlin Bassett said in her section of that interview, I have a feeling that like right from the get-go in the new series, right from the pilot, you are going to know that Ben and Addison are very heavily invested in each other.
Oh, you think people. So, Dennis? You think that's, you have a feeling about that?
I have a feeling about that. I'm just saying.
Well, you know what else I've got a feeling about? I've got a feeling about our overall ratings here. And before we get to our overall ratings, because we did not actually do it this time around, we usually do. I'm just going to tag this on right here if you've been listening this whole time thinking, what are they doing? So our Quantum Leap Revisited series, our capsule-sized reviews of the classic series with the mission to rank the show on a scale of 1 to 10 based on 5 different categories: writing, directing, acting, production values, and mythology. Each category is weighted based on importance, or at least our thought of how important they should be. Writing, directing, and acting are each worth 25% of the average, and production values are 15%, and mythology is just 10%. Our original reviews sought to stimulate discussion and contextualize the episode based on when it was set, when it aired, and when our discussion took place. We also provided lots of background information and behind-the-scenes information, as well as our personal opinions of each episode, usually going scene by scene by scene by scene by scene. And they were long, they were packed, they were dense, they were deep dives in every spirit of the word. In every spirit of the word? Is that even a... I don't know. COVID brain. And we love that we were able to do that for the entirety of the series, and we encourage our listeners, if you have not heard those episodes, to go back and check them out, especially for your favorite episodes, and see if you agree with us or disagree with us, and furthermore, see if we agree with ourselves, because there is no doubt that our opinions have certainly evolved and changed over time, as some of the ratings that we are now doing on these capsule side reviews will show you. We thought this would be a great way to revisit the episodes with only our opinion of the categories previously mentioned, and give the listeners a compact rating of each episode of the classic series in the lead up to the premiere of the new series in the fall of 2022. So that's the whole deal here. We're finishing up season one now. And you know what? I think we should do something when we finish this rating. Actually, I'll pop that on you in a second here. So my total score for Play It Again, Seymour is a 7.8 or a 78%, which I feel like is really solid. It ends up, being one of the higher rated episodes of the season for me. And I think that there is no doubt that Quantum Leap did go out on a high note at the end of its first season. But we'll get to that in a second. Dennis, what about you? What did you have?
Mine ended up being 8.4.
Nice. All right.
Pretty highly rated. Fast and dirty. Rate the first season.
Well,
episode by episode.
See, that's
what I was going to throw it at me.
I was totally going to throw that at you here. Okay. So before I do, I do want to actually just do a quick little bit of math, if you'll allow me, because I want to do the actual numbers here, just for our listeners at home, if you're playing along, and then we'll actually do the short of it as well. But I, you know, overall, I think that the first season, it has some issues. It's not always successful. But I do think that ultimately, it gives us a good reason for the show to be, it gives us enough to know that this is a show that should be picked up. You know what I mean? This is a show that should not just languish, in the first season cancellation, pit that so many other, you know, good shows or decent shows that have shown a flicker, of greatness never got the chance to really spread their wings and fly. you know, this wasn't a show with an established, an established franchise behind it, or an up and coming franchise, or something that they could revive like Star Trek or something, where, you know, you gave a pass to it. It wasn't on syndication where you might give a pass to it. It didn't have like a star name or any star power behind it where you might give a pass to a middling or uneven first season. You know, this was a show that did have obviously a big time producer in Don Bellisario behind it. He had done some other successful programs at that point, but ultimately, I do think that the show succeeds mostly on episodes that weren't written by Don Bellisario, and succeeds off of the chemistry and the quality acting that we get from our lead characters. Overall, if I go through all the ratings of the episodes and do an average of the total, the season gets a 74% or 7.4 out of 10. Which I'm comfortable with. I think that's a good representation of season one overall. You know, we get the amazing run in those last three episodes of Color of Truth, Kamikaze Kid, and Play It Again, Seymour. Play It Again, Seymour being the lesser of those three, but still being higher rated than all of the previous episodes, with the exception of the pilot. So I that's not to be an indictment of Star-Crossed, Right Hand of God, How the Test Was Won, or Double Identity. There's things to like in those episodes, but I do think that when you boil it down, we kind of had a 50-50 season. You had four really strong, good examples of Quantum Leap, and four examples of Quantum Leap, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm not going to do the math because I'm not as organized as you because I don't have all of those.
Sure.
Like what the overall rating of the season was. Like, if Quantum Leap had only lasted one season, how much of a cult status do you think it would have? If at all.
At eight episodes, I think it would have been pretty much forgotten. I think that there's a chance that it would be, you know, it'd be one of those shows that maybe people talked about on a message board for like old sci-fi TV shows. But
sure,
that would be about it. I don't think it would have ever seen any sort of, you know, DVD or Blu-ray release, obviously.
Oh, God, no.
You know, I don't know that maybe sci-fi would have like aired it at midnights on Saturday nights. Just for 8 weeks, just to fill program space or something. But yeah, it would have been that curiosity that had Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell in it. You know, Bakula would have gone on to kind of grind it out for a while before he maybe hit on something, I think. You know, yeah. Stockwell, his career was pretty much already in the bag at that point. He didn't have to do too much more if he didn't want to. So, yeah, I think overall, it would. What about you? What do you think?
I think just from the premise alone, I can see a world where the premise was dug out of mothballs.
Oh,
to reboot it.
Yeah, you know, I could totally see that. I could totally see that. Or at the very least, somebody would have done something like it. Somebody at some point would have been, you know, like, oh, you, do you ever remember that show Quantum Leap about the guy, you know, in time where I could totally see, you know, like 2002, you know, CW or WB rather,
sure,
whatever, you know,
yeah,
that sort of show. Only Sam would now be like, you know, 24.
And, oh, God,
You know, washboard anyway, abs. Yeah. And
sure. Anyway. So here's my rating of the season going down the list here. And this was just like fast and dirty, not too much thought. Color Truth, Kamikaze Kid, Played Against Seymour, The Pilot, How the Test Was Won, Right Hand of God, Star-Crossed, Double Identity.
You know, I think, okay, so I didn't realize we were going to do it that way. Let me take a quick look at this because I think we have very, very similar. Let's see. So I've got Color of Truth, Kamikaze Kid, The Pilot, Played Against Seymour, Right Hand of God. Ooh, this is interesting. I have Double Identity, Star-Crossed, and How the Test Was Won.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, fast and dirty. There it is.
There it is.
There we go.
There it is.
All right, we...
This has been fun. I just have to say, I'm enjoying the fact that we're doing this and I'm looking forward to seeing what the journey on season two is like. I know initially the thought was that we would only do kind of like our sort of essentials before the new series airs, which we will do an episode with our essential episodes, just as kind of a list before the revival series begins. But in the meantime, this has been fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what we do with season two.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. We haven't talked about it because I know we got like, well, we're going to do season one every episode. We hadn't decided for season two, but let's talk about that off mic. Let's figure out if you have feedback, if you have ideas, do you want us to do all of season two? Or
I think at this point,
select episodes. I think
we kind of have to.
we got some time to fill before October.
At least four months.
Yeah. And a little preview, just give me a heads up. And then we're going to get out of your ears here. What we're planning to do when the new series launches is that we don't know what platform we're going to be on, but we are going to do live watch parties. So you can like watch along quietly, make comments or whatever. But everybody will be muted, like watch along. And then immediately after Sam and I, we're going to be recording our episode and dropping it Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
Because it airs on Mondays, right? Yeah, right after The Voice.
That's
Yeah. And then we'll drop it Tuesday mornings. Episodes will be full of spoilers, so don't listen to us until you have a chance to watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot believe. I mean, I never thought for one second that I would ever actually do something on a show that was currently airing.
Just because my taste and everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Everything I love either gets canceled or has been off the air for 20 years.
Yeah.
That's not true. There's been plenty of great shows since then.
And it was a last note, and we'll get out of here. I did think about briefly just doing a solo Time Traveler's Wife podcast because the new series is on HBO.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there is no Time Traveler's Wife podcast out there because I love the only thing are like one-off episodes from other podcasts that talk about books and they're talking about the book.
Right.
I'm loving the new show. It's on HBO. It's a 6-episode season one. I'm not clear whether there's supposed to be a season two or if it's a self-contained thing or whatever. I'm loving it. It's getting dragged by critics. I don't know. I'm trying to get Sam to watch it. Let us know in the comments or whatever if you're interested. If we just do a one episode thing, where we just talk about it, and I can come in as the expert because I've read the novel at least 3 times, and you know you have it, and you just watch the series, and then
I think that sounds like a lot of fun. We should do that. I mean, obviously last year before the announcement of the revival series, we were doing one-off episodes about all sorts of stuff. Whether it was, you know, an MCU show, or we talked about The Good Place at one point. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the freedom that I always envisioned for naming the podcast Fate's Wide Wheel, mm-hmm. is that we would be able to kind of just land wherever we wanted to and leap around and talk about what we wanted to. Under the circumstances, we get to talk about Quantum Leap a whole lot more, which is exciting. And I'm looking forward to that. I will just throw out there before we get out of here that if you're looking for other things to watch, Obi-Wan Kenobi is going on. It's happening. The first 2 episodes dropped on my birthday. They were amazing. I loved them. I'm not going to spoil anything in case you haven't seen them. Of course, it's the most watched premiere in Disney Plus history, so I'm pretty sure that if you listen to this, you've probably seen it or maybe you've heard of it. The third episode was great. That dropped today because we're recording on a Wednesday. Also, a show that I'm sure other people that are listening to this are very familiar with and are probably going to be like, yeah, duh, Barry. I finally started watching Barry because I have to isolate and I'm sitting down here with nothing to do. I threw Barry on. I binged the first season like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. What a brilliant show. What a brilliant show. It's written so well. Bill Hader is incredible. The highs, the lows, the comedy, the really dark, brutal drama of it. Just so incredibly well done. It deserves all the praise that I've read and heard about it over the past couple of years. And looking forward to continuing the journey. I'm a couple episodes into season two. It's weird because I had read a couple of things after I finished season one, and one of the reviewers even stated I think this was after the season two premiere, that the show was so good in the first season, if they would have stopped after one season, like it still would have just been like amazing, great, incredible, and they could have just ended it there. But the second season kicks off in an amazing way as well. So, you know, the reviewer was like, I'm glad they didn't. I hope that it runs, you know, for as long as they want it to.
Sure.
But they did such an amazing job that had they just stopped, it still would have been this great, amazing, like groundbreaking show. So gets a super high recommendation for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Speaking of shows, first season, second season, whatever. Russian Doll.
Gotta see it.
Here's the thing. First season, absolutely phenomenal. Second season starts off strong. I can't decide if the second season actually said something or if they just wrote themselves into a corner and at the end they just got weird for weird's sake and they just
Interesting. Just gonna throw
a bunch of stuff at you.
I think we mentioned it before on the podcast, but like it in addition to Quantum Leap, you know, getting the revival series and being in the news for that, like every reviewer that reviewed Russian Doll season two talked about Quantum Leap in their review because it's very Quantum Leap like because she is leaping basically into family members, right? Like
Whereas season one was very much like Groundhog Day, season two was very much like leaping into starting with her mom back in the 1980s and then at one point like going even further back into the past, like World War II era. But it is very much like I don't know if the showrunners, the show creators, like if that was their intention, but as soon as they realized the connection, like they leaned into it. Like like in the last episode, like they're talking about something and Natasha Lyonne, the main character, like she literally says to the other main character, like, yeah, that's Quantum Leaping 101.
Nice.
Very nice. I need to go back and rewatch the last few episodes because, like I said, I can't decide whether it actually said something or whether it just got weird for weird's sake.
Yeah.
But as far as like some of the from the production standpoint, like the things that like they did with like the mirror and how they explored like Natasha versus the person whose life she was inhabiting and how they jumped back and forth between those two things, I really do hope Quantum Leap picks up some of those things, because like they will cut away and they will show like other people's perspective and like the mom interacting instead of Natasha Lyonne.
Oh, interesting.
Like you hear the mom talking.
I would love that.
Her moving around.
It's one of the things that we talked about that the classic series I think could have benefited from, because while most episodes are purely from Sam's point of view, so it makes sense that we see Scott Bakula, there are scenes where it is clearly from another character's point of view, and rather than seeing Sam talking to thin air, it would have been really interesting to see the Leapy talking to thin air or whatever. And I would love that if they do that in the new show. You know, I don't know obviously what the plan is or logistically, or, you know, even when it comes to contracts and SAG and et cetera, what they can do, what they don't want to do, what they want to pay for or not want to pay for. But I think it would be a great idea.
I can't imagine that they won't. And here's the last one. And then I promise I'm going to get out of yours. I hope that they adopt the Good Places strategy. I can't think of the right word right now. Of when Janet popped in and out somewhere on the Good Place, they didn't do like, you know, stop the camera, have her walk off frame, or whatever. They didn't have it like pop out like Al does in the old series. They would always change the camera angle.
Yeah.
With the sound effect. So you never actually saw like a special effect. It was just like the changing of a camera angle.
Right.
I hope they do that with Addison.
Well, the wonderful thing, can I say this? No, I probably can't say that. All right. I just have a feeling that the first time we see Addison, it'll be cool. It'll be different. It'll be a little different. Anyway. Yeah, well, and Stranger Things also is dropped, the first part of Stranger Things season 4. I've only watched the first episode because that's something that my wife Jessica and I watched together, and we haven't been able to do that, which I just want to cry because I miss them so much. I'm literally FaceTiming my own family while I'm in my own house. It's 2022. How the hell did I get COVID in June of 2022? Anyway.
Hang in there.
You know what? Thank you so much, everyone, for your time, for listening, for your comments, for your emails, for your patronage. That means so much to us. Really, truly appreciate it. If you have a little extra money, if you're looking to do something with it, again, I'll say my standard. Get back to your community in some way. You know, donate to a food bank. If you want to donate wider, I will always recommend Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders, in addition to being amazing at providing critical health care for people all across the world that cannot get it, it's important to note, I think, in this particular time, in this particular day and age, I do believe that we're a global community, and Doctors Without Borders performed over 30,000 safe abortions for people that needed it last year alone, or unfortunately helped with, I believe, somewhere around 19,000 women who suffered from botched abortions. So I think it's incredibly important to support such a cause as that. Take care of yourselves, take care of one another, leap responsibly. I said that a few weeks ago and I love it, so I'm just keeping it.
Yeah.
if you have a little money after you've donated to those other causes and you want to give it to us, then by all means, we promise to use it in ways that hopefully we'll all benefit from, we'll all enjoy. And we hope to have some really interesting conversations coming up very, very soon with some cool people. So stay tuned. Make sure you check out the Quantum Leap podcast. Again, that episode with the show and tell of Quantum Leap collections, I think, will be dropping soon, if it hasn't already by the time this episode drops. But it was such a great time. So thanks to Albie for having me on. It was awesome to be able to talk with everyone and get to kind of meet, you know, face to face with people like Allison and Brian, who I'd never met before. So it was a great time. And I really, really appreciate it. Dennis?
Let's leap out of here.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Yeah. See you next week. Bye-bye.
As I travel in space and time, I want to stay, I want to go. You see my face, but it's not mine. But you can see, you'll never know. How can we meet if I